Babinuriya, Goraya, Jate, Deena Patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. We are now going to explain Gurudev Kripa Bindu Deya. This is under the section Bhajan Lalasha, hankering for divine service. Gurudev, by a drop of your mercy, make this servant of yours more humble than a blade of grass. Give me strength to bear all trials and troubles, and free me from all desires for personal honor. This follows the line of Lord Chaitanya, that one should become more humble than a blade of grass. A blade of grass is trampled upon, but does not protest. Of course, there is some good fortune to being a blade of grass, especially if the grass takes its birth in Vrindavan. We see some very big persons aspired for grass bodies. Lord Brahma, Narad Muni, and Sri Uddhava. They all desired to be born as a blade of grass. Why? Because they wanted the dust of the feet of the Brijvasis upon their heads. How can one be a servant if he is not humble? It's not possible. A servant can only think in terms of the welfare of the master. In the final pastimes of Srila Prabhupada, we got an opportunity for serving Prabhupada as far as possible in an unconditional mood. It was such a demanding time where at every moment we had to be always attentive to see to Prabhupada's every need. And during those final months, we saw so many devotees come to Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada would tell them the final instruction about their service. But because we were serving in the position of the secretary, our service was to tell Srila Prabhupada that you're not going to leave your body, that you will recover your health and live amongst us for so much more time. So we could never ask Prabhupada, what is it that you want of me? But I always had the feeling that anyway, Prabhupada will he will let me know in every way, even if I don't ask this question. And one thing that I felt is that by serving him like this, he allowed me to see how he lived in Vrindavan. And I thought this is very important, most important, to see how the spiritual master does his bhajan in Vrindavan. In fact, I always used to pray in the early years. Once, I think it in the Chaitanya Chaitamrita when it came out in 1975. And in the Chaitanya Chaitamrita I read that when the spiritual master reaches a very advanced age, he may withdraw and retire with a few of his disciples. So when I read that, I was thinking, I hope that I can be one of those disciples who can be with him at that time. So Prabhupada and Krishna fulfilled my prayer like this. And I got to see Prabhupada at that time, see him in all of his service to Krishna in Vrindavan. And it was very necessary to try to always be in a humble mood. Of course, we can serve the spiritual master's instructions, as you are all doing on Sankirtan, where it is so necessary to be in a humble mood always. As soon as you become a little puffed up on Sankirtan, you get smashed. And when you remain humble, it's like the whole thing happens of its own accord. You become moved by your spiritual master and Krishna to speak and act in wonderful ways which allow the people to effortlessly practically take the books. You become a tool, an instrument in the hands of Guru and Krishna through that humility. Whereas on the other hand, if you think, I am doing it, I am the book distributor, and I am getting big results, everything becomes blocked. The mercy of Guru doesn't flow. Here he says, give me strength to bear all trials and troubles. This means that as devotees, we should expect trials and troubles. How can you think that you will not have trials and troubles, considering what a nonsense we were for so many millions of lifetimes? We don't have to think about millions of lifetimes. We can just think about this lifetime. We were doing so many nonsense things. How can you think that you won't have difficulties? But Rupa Goswami says that you should be prepared to tolerate all difficulties, living out whatever result may be there from past karmic activities, and go on with your service. And that is yoga. Yoga means to control the mind and to control the senses. Vacho vegam, manasya krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udara pashta vegam. These are different things we have to control. We have to control the mind, words, anger. And if we can do this, then we can advance to further stages of Krishna consciousness. So, expect difficulty. But the difference is that in the material world, if you go out there, you're going to face difficulty. But what will be the benefit? No benefit. You'll face difficulty, and then it will lead to more difficulties. But here in Krishna consciousness, when you face difficulty and overcome it, what will it lead to? Peace of mind. Once and for all, you can solve the problems of life. So it is very worthwhile to undergo these difficulties. And don't think that, oh, why am I suffering? If you are suffering, it is very good. Actually, it is a good sign. Just like sometimes when you have a disease, it remains inside. And when the disease finally comes up, everybody has this experience with a cold. When you first contact it, you feel some weakness and other things. But when the symptoms start manifesting, that's the beginning of your recovery. So you should think that when the troubles come, good. Why is it good? Because it means that the fruit of the seeds of sinful past actions are now manifest. Okay, at least now I know what I'm dealing with. You see. Whereas if they don't happen yet, you know, it just means that you've got so much more to wait for in the future. Whereas this way, when the troubles come, you can think, okay, at least it's already started to happen. The worst is happening. Now I can deal with it. So, he says, give me strength. Who? Oh, Gurudev. He's praying to the spiritual master. Give me strength. We have to pray to our spiritual master. We should not think that we will get some help elsewhere. The help comes from Guru. And Guru may make other arrangements, but we should always know that our spiritual master is our ever-well-wisher. In all fortune, we understand that this is the mercy of my Guru coming to me. So he's praying, give me strength. How do we get strength from our spiritual master? Can he hear our prayers? Yes. What if he's 5,000, 3,000, 1,000 kilometers away? Can he still hear? Yes. How can he hear? How can the spiritual master be present if he's so far away? Because the spiritual master is the representative of Sri Nityananda Ram. Sometimes people ask, you know, should we be devoted to Lord Nityananda, or should we be devoted to Lord Chaitanya? But we should understand that Lord Nityananda comes to us in the form of the spiritual master. And because of his potency, because of Balaram or Nityananda's potency, the Guru can hear our prayers and the Guru can reciprocate with us, even though he may be very, very distant place. And how does he help us? One practical way is through instructions. The spiritual master gives general instructions, and if you're very lucky, then he gives you specific instructions. We should never disregard general instructions, and we should certainly never disregard individual instructions. Because if you don't even follow the individual instructions, then what hope is there? If the spiritual master is so kind as to give you very special direction, and still you don't follow it, then what is the meaning of having a guru? Why do we take a spiritual master? We take a spiritual master to get out of the material world. We don't take a spiritual master who simply praises us and says, "Oh, you're a nice boy, you're a nice girl," even though we're such a nonsense. If we have difficulty, we expect that the spiritual master should shed light on it and show us what needs to be done. And that is his mercy. So here, Thakur Bhaktivinoda is talking like this: free me from all desires of all types, especially for honor. Oh, I am a great devotee. I am a great lecturer, better than all others. I am a great Sankirtan devotee, better than all others. I am a great cook, better than all others. I am a great pujari. Have you noticed that I dressed the deities today, and what a difference it made? You know, and it goes on and on, how we seek honor. And when we get dishonored, what happens? You're my enemy. That's it. Sometimes people get chastised by their guru, and they think that actually, my guru doesn't know me, my guru doesn't love me, or my guru doesn't really see that actually I'm quite all right, or my guru doesn't know how to deal with me, because really he should be very gentle with me. Never mind that I'm a nonsense. Well, maybe you don't want a guru. Maybe you want a pet dog. Maybe you would have been better having a pet animal who you can just tell, jump, look, sit, lay down, do what I say. What is it that we actually want when we accept a spiritual master? So, we should be lessons from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, how he's praying to the spiritual master, and try to enter into a similar mood.
Sakale saman korite shakati deho nata jatayata tabe to gaibo harinama suke aparadha abhihata. O Lord and Master, inspire me with the power to properly honor all living beings. Only then will I sing the holy name in great ecstasy and all my offenses cease. We have already told the story once in Zurich, but here are many devotees who were not there, so we will repeat again. Once there was a very aristocratic and proud Bengali gentleman who came to a devotee, a great devotee, asking him for initiation. But the devotee understood that this person is not ready for that because he is just too proud. But again and again that gentleman kept on returning, asking, please give me initiation. So finally this Mahatma, the sadhu, told him, only if you find someone or something who or which is inferior to you in all respects. The gentleman thought, that's an easy task, I just go out of the hut and the next person I see, I bring him, and then that's the time for my initiation. I have reached the qualification. But as he left, the humble Vaishnava, he understood that Brahma had created all living entities with qualifications but also disqualifications. No person is just inferior in all respects. So, for instance, someone may be not so well read, but he may be a better cook, or someone may not be able to distribute many candles, but he is a great book distributor. So, no one is inferior to anyone in all respects. So he began searching in the animal kingdom. But also amongst the animals, he didn't find any single animal inferior to him in all respects. The eagle was maybe not so highly intelligent, but he had good eyesight. And the ass, in a similar way, may not have good eyes, but he is extremely strong. Finally, he understood the lesson on humility, and in a dejected mood, went to the field to answer nature's call. He became very glad, because as he looked down, he saw, finally, I have found something which is inferior to me in all respects. No one wants to associate with this aggressive smelling substance. But as he reflected, he understood that even the stool is not inferior to him in all respects, because before it came in contact with the body, it was succulent vegetables. But then in the contact with his body, it turned into this rejectable substance. Again, he became dejected when a worm cheered up his lost courage, because the worm was going into that substance, aiming for it, which was rejected by anything, by everything, by everyone. So he thought, finally, I found the worm. He is inferior to me in all respects. He wanted to bring that to the great Vaishnava. But then by a good strike of reason, he also understood, no! The worm has one quality which I don't have. It can transform even this substance into something of value, something which can be used to put dung on the fields. In this way he found out that he is actually not able to pass the test. He is actually not able to find someone or something which is more, which is inferior to him in all respects. He felt extremely humbled, and as humility rose in his heart, he cried, he said, I can't have this human form of life, but I'm not even able to pass a simple test by my spiritual master. And he went and said, I'm sorry, I'm such a fool, and I actually understood by your mercy how deep is my ignorance. I thought actually I'm the king of the world because of my meager knowledge, but now I see that this was wrong. It was wrong. It was wrong. As the story goes, the merciful Vaishnava said, now you are qualified. So, humility is really an important quality, and it manifests in properly honoring all living beings. The greatest welfare to be done to some living entity is to bring him back to Krishna consciousness, because we know he is, as the Upanishads say, Amrita Putra. He is not a temporary body, but an eternally related to Sri Krishna. We can honor each living entity as a part of the Supreme. We may not honor him as a devotee doesn't honor anyone in any other way than his advancement in Krishna consciousness, his advancement in his service attitude towards the Supreme. So humility is very, very important, and to honor living entities is also very, very important. Lord Chaitanya's movement is based on two principles: Nama Ruchi, that is a taste in the holy name, and Jiva Daya, that means showing mercy to other living entities. And to show mercy really means you care for someone, you honor him in that sense, that you see he's a lost son of the Supreme or lost servant of the Supreme. So it requires some power. The potency which is necessary to honor others is that you can overcome the temptations of your mind, which is under the control of false ego and is attached to false importance. Only someone who is able to properly honor living beings is on the spiritual platform. And only such a personality is able to sing the holy name in taste, in ecstasy. Here, why? Because he has lost material desires. Material desires are not very good. Materialists are proud on them desires, but devotees are ashamed of them. To give an analogy, if you have worms in your stomach, that's the second quite drastic example. These worms will eat up the food which you put into the stomach. You will not be able to take full advantage of the food because the worms will become fat. Your belly might also show symptoms of inflation, of becoming bigger. However, you don't receive any nourishment. This is the situation when someone is full with material desires. He can be in a spiritual atmosphere, he can be in the association of Vaishnavas, but the desires eat up all the benefit. He doesn't progress in spiritual life. So the materialists are proud on the number of the worms in their stomach, whereas a Vaishnava is ashamed, knowing well that these material desires take away his strength to surrender to the Lord. Sanat Kumara expressed this subject matter to King Prithu when he said that just like a lake is absorbed by the grass which grows just inside of it, it's not directly, what stands in the water, these kind of grassy things, and gets dry. In the same way, the consciousness of the living entity becomes absorbed by material desires. And in this way, it is not possible to free our mind from sense gratification and direct it on Supreme Lord with taste. So a devotee wants this power from the spiritual master to properly honor all living entities. He wants a spiritual vision. He wants to give Jiva Daya. He wants to preach to them. That's a power. Srila Prabhupada said that some of his god brothers did approach their spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, for buildings. They wanted to have the mat in Park Bazaar. and get control over buildings. But Srila Prabhupada said, the spiritual master may give that material facilities, but that's not the real present. He says they couldn't get the power to preach the holy name all over. So unless and until we do become free from our worms, that means material desires, it will not be possible for us to dive in the ocean of preaching, and we might feel dissatisfied and commit offenses due to a lack of spiritual taste.
O Lord and Master, when will this devotee be blessed by obtaining your mercy? I am low, fallen, and devoid of all strength and intelligence. Please make me your beloved servant. Once Srila Prabhupada was sitting in his room in Vrindavan, and one of his disciples said, I'm just a fool, Srila Prabhupada, I'm just a fool, trying to excuse a mistake he had made. And Prabhupada said, when you approach the spiritual master, you should approach as a fool. But after being instructed by him, if you still remain a fool, that's not very good. Then another time, Srila Prabhupada said that as long as we always think of ourselves as a fool before our guru, then we will be all right. But as soon as we stop thinking of ourselves as a fool, then we are in a fallen condition. So these two appear contradictory. Here, we see such an elevated person saying that he feels very low and fallen. And actually, this is the mood of a genuine devotee. He does not see that he has any good qualities, but he sees everyone else's good qualities. At the same time, he becomes both discouraged and encouraged. Discouraged, or we can say better, humbled. But encouraged in the sense that I have the fortune to have so much advanced association around me. Just as Maharaj has given the example of how one had to try to find someone who was in every way inferior and eventually realized it's impossible. So we have to see the good qualities of others and concentrate not on our own good qualities, but see our own disqualifications. What is intelligence? Here, Srila Bhaktivinoda prays that he says, I have no good intelligence. That means that any thoughts which come in our mind separately from or without being confirmed by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, they are of bad intelligence. Ritagyana, prapadyante. We see, just like there's different verses in Bhagavad Gita about worship of the demigods, the intelligence becomes spoiled. Maya Vritagana, the knowledge becomes stolen. So intelligence here is not a function of the material mind or brain. As long as we have that type of intelligence, it's mundane and it's sure to fail us. But intelligence is described, Krishna says that he's sitting in the heart And he gives knowledge, and he gives intelligence or remembrance. He lights up, he illuminates the heart with transcendental knowledge. Dipigyan. So, the whole point is to become genuinely humble and to pray for superior help. This prayer, Gurudev Kripa Bindu Diya, give me a drop of your mercy. It is praying to the spiritual master to learn how to become dependent on Guru. One who is fully dependent upon his Guru is actually not poor, actually most intelligent. When we were in India with Srila Prabhupada, sometimes people would find fault with us because of our lack of proper culture. Being brought up in the West, we were not accustomed to act properly. And people, in fact, sometimes we acted so improperly that people had to bring it to Prabhupada's attention. And Prabhupada's comment was, you're right. There, my disciples are certainly not qualified as you people are. He said, but one thing about them I have seen. Whatever I say, they firmly believe in it and carry out my instruction. And when Prabhupada said that, it was clear that that one qualification was sufficient to surpass all, to balance more in its favor than all the disqualifications that we may have had. So this whole prayer is to try to teach us to learn to be totally dependent on the spiritual master. To learn that from our side, I have zero. I am zero. I have zero. But in connection with you, I actually become wealthy. I actually develop all good qualities. He says, please make me your beloved servant. Service should be offered with love, but that's not so easy to do. First of all, we are in fear or awe of the spiritual master. But awe and reverence is based not on love, but on fear. So gradually, I always feel this, that we have to advance. Sometimes I think now what it will be like to again be physically with Prabhupada. And the one thought I always have is that I will be able to serve him with more love, in a more natural loving mood. And that will be very sweet. I think of how so many times when I served officially. Of course, because of Prabhupada's purity, some small inkling of genuine feeling may have been extracted from my otherwise dry heart. But I feel that now, after years and in the years to come, that by rendering service, that when I get the chance again, that it will be with more sweetness, with more of the qualities which we can, you know, understand to be loving feelings. And here, this is, please make me your beloved servant. Not just dutiful servant. Not just, you know, a disciplined servant. But make me your loving servant. Because after all, why are we approaching the spiritual master? He is a vaya media. He's Krishna come to us in the form of a devotee. He's the person in whom we see Krishna reflected. He's the person who we practice, you can say even, serving in such a way that one day that service will be fit for being offered directly to Krishna. Krishna cannot be approached merely out of awe, out of reverence, out of discipline. That's why it's explained that when you worship Radha Krishna deities, you're actually worshiping in awe and reverence, you're actually worshiping Lakshmi Narayana. Because the only way to approach Krishna is with love. And so he's praying make me your beloved servant. Because he knows that through serving the spiritual master with love, one will actually become qualified to serve Lord Chaitanya and to serve Sri Sri Radha and Krishna.
When I examine myself, I find nothing of value. Your mercy is therefore essential to me. If you are not merciful, I will constantly weep and no longer maintain my life. Here, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in great humility, says that the only thing of value in him is the amount of mercy which he has obtained. And that is not his value, but that is the value or the gift of his spiritual master. This is the treasure of a devotee. The times when his spiritual master showed him his mercy, we should expect ourselves to be always in the position of asking for that mercy. Once Srila Prabhupada went with devotees to the Central Park in New York, and there were, and some ducks were fed, and one particular loud squeaking duck, ducking duck or whatever the sound is, quacking duck, got the most foodstuff. So in the same way, a devotee who
who quacks the loudest? Who quacked
the loudest? Prabhupada asked this. He said, "See, he quacks the loudest; he gets the most." So, in the same way, a devotee is desirous to get the mercy. Now, it shouldn't be just a lip service. Show me the mercy. That intensity of desire to get the mercy is shown by the devotee's sincere attempt to follow the instructions, whatever instructions he has obtained. So, I really want to ask now a question to Dhammakrishna Maharaj. I just don't feel proper in speaking here, because there is a long question in my mind which I want to take the chance to ask this question now. Maharaj, when I remember the times when I had contacts with Srila Prabhupada, it was always that Prabhupada corrected me for mistakes which I made. And therefore, when I think of Srila Prabhupada, I think of him not directly with fear, because I like to be corrected by Prabhupada. I didn't think this was, it didn't disturb the relationship in the surrender. But I do think fear, but not in that way that I run away from Prabhupada. And you were very often in Prabhupada's service. You were several times his secretary. You were directly instructed in your service. And you were doing service in Bombay. Prabhupada gave you so many instructions. And in the remaining days when Prabhupada taught us his final lessons, could you just tell a little of Prabhupada's person? Just Prabhupada's personality. I know that's a deep subject, but could you tell something of comforting me who has this relationship to Srila Prabhupada? And I think also for the devotees who are grandsons and daughters of Srila Prabhupada. Many pictures where we see Prabhupada, he's very stern, actually. He has a mission. He won, and so on and so forth. There are also smiling photos, but when you read the books,
Prabhupada is very, it's very serious. It's get serious. That's the meaning. So how did you? There, of course, also Prabhupada's mercy. We know he's the ocean of mercy. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. We know he has given us the holy name, and so on and so forth. So, can you say something to comfort our hearts about the all-merciful Prabhupada?
Finish speaking. Well, you are so expert. You are such a master of ceremonies in praising others that you don't even distinguish who is worthy of praise and who is not worthy of praise, which proves your superior position that you don't make distinctions. I'm trying to comfort you. I think the spiritual master is at liberty to be in his own mood, and we should not try to qualify or judge that mood. One time, someone asked, you know, why does your spiritual master always look so grave or so unhappy or angry? They asked me, and I said that it's not unhappiness, but Krishna consciousness is very deep, and we may not always understand the inner mood of the spiritual master, because it may not always be reflected externally as what is going on internally. So I think that if we want to understand Srila Prabhupada's varying moods, his spiritual moods, we have to make more advancement to actually understand the depth of all of the feelings which he had. Externally, a feeling may manifest as anger, but internally it may be the greatest degree of love which brings one to that point. Just as we see, a father or mother may be berating or angry upon a child, and you may not know the relationship between the two and think, why is the father or mother so harsh? But actually it may be out of a great sense of love. So the degree of love which a pure devotee has for Krishna and for all of Krishna's parts and parcels is so intense, but it manifests in many different ways as the devotee is trying to bring that conditioned soul to Krishna's lotus feet. So I think that if we absorb ourselves more in the pastimes of Krishna and how he reciprocates with his eternal devotees, and we remember that our spiritual master is such an eternal associate, we certainly felt Prabhupada to be in such a... We understood that he was coming from the association of Krishna, that he had has the association of Krishna. If we see that, and then also see the varying moods which he manifests before us, we may better be able to connect the two and to understand that what appears to be anger, what appears to be so many grave and deep and, you know, serious moods, has more to do with this swimming in the waves of the ocean of, you know, bhakti to Krishna and to Guru. I think it's difficult to judge a Vaishnava, as I quoted this morning. It is difficult to understand the mind of a Vaishnava. So we cannot understand just by the external appearance alone. So I think we should stop here because it is late. Tomorrow is another day for Sankirtan. Everyone should take rest early, get plenty of rejuvenation for more Sankirtan pastimes. The devotees are very lucky to be able to see the unfolding pastimes of Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan party, meeting more and more people, having unusual interactions with them, and each person going away so much benefited and purified. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sri Guru Parampara ki
jai.
Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur ki
jai.
Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki
jai.
Gaur Premanandi.
Jai.
Holiness Satchinandan Swami Maharaj ki
jai.